Welcome to the Holy Shit Podcast. Frank and Patsy get together to discuss the issues of the moment. You know, the things that make you say, holy shit. Here are your hosts, Master Hapkidoist, Patsy Zarilla, and Attorney Frank Natel, Esquire.
Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in?
And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby Normal.
Abby Normal.
I'm almost sure that was the name.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Holy Shit for Wednesday, November 27th, 2019, episode number 50. Number 50, we hit the big 50, half a century. I am your co-host, Patsy Zarilla.
And I'm your co-host, Frank Natel. Wow, 50, that's cool, man. That's really
it's
good.
It's not too bad, huh, Frank? We're getting there, you know?
I think
definitely for our 100th episode, we should include scotch in it and see what we're like at the end of the episode.
I'm down to count. We'll memorialize that moment in time for sure.
So before we go any further, Frank, let me be among the first to wish you and all of our listeners a very happy Thanksgiving, or I should say our listeners here in the States. And I hope you enjoy the time that everybody spends with their families.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. Safe travels if people are traveling today and tomorrow. You know, the busiest time to travel is right now, I think, in every year annually, and they predict that today will be the today and tomorrow will be among the busiest. So be careful while you're out there in your travels.
Yes, please, everybody, stay safe. Okay. This is no one likes bad things to happen to anybody at any time, but around the holidays makes it even worse. So please be careful. Frank, there's been a lot of things going on recently, and God knows we've touched on a bunch of them. Some of the things we've touched on were even positive.
Oh, yeah.
Not many, but we have hit a few positive things here or there. You and I were talking before we got on air, and you brought up a pretty good point. So why don't you kind of take over from here?
Well, I mean, today we've slowed down. If you're looking at the news of what's going on, there's not a whole lot, you know, in the way of the big bombshells that we experienced in the last 2 weeks. And thinking about those bombshells, you know, if you were someone, not you particularly, but just hypothetically, the listener, if you were one who had experienced or absorbed the onslaught of factual evidence and fact witnesses that came forward to admonish the president's behavior on that phone call and leading up to that phone call with Vladimir Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, you know, with all the very credible, clear, factual evidence that's been presented, and you were in a trial or you were going to be indicted, and the level for indictment, I want you to understand in the criminal process, is can you walk into a grand jury room or walk in front of a magistrate here in Pennsylvania, convince a magistrate who has a very low bar when they're looking at this case to say, if I take all the facts that are presented to me in the light most favorable to the prosecution, should this case go to trial? That's it. Just should this case go to trial? Is there enough evidence, just a very low bar of evidence, to send this case to trial? Okay, so if we're looking at it, the impeachment process as that process, is there enough to send this to a trial in the Senate? Maybe it's a little more heightened because we're talking about impeachment. I'll grant you that. But if you were in that setting, and all that evidence came in, you hypothetical listener, what do you think that maybe it's time to go cut a deal? If there's no credible evidence to refute the credible evidence that's been placed against you. Instead, what we have now is the folks who are supporting the person who's being accused and credibly accused, who are taking very entrenched positions into wild conspiracy theories that have just been debunked. Let's take, for example, Justice Kennedy out of Louisiana. Not Justice Kennedy. I'm sorry. There was Justice Kennedy. I mean,
John Kennedy. John Kennedy
from Louisiana, who has come out and 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I think it was, supported this idea that the Ukraine has a server and the crazy CrowdStrike theory that's been debunked. And he did it on Fox News, and he was called out on Fox News. Well, he realized that he was, and that he said that maybe it was Ukraine, not Russia, that interfered in our elections. Just 2 days later, he had to come back and say, I was mistaken. That was a debunked theory. Now, if he was paying attention to anything, would he ever make that statement? But you've got these people who are supporting the accused, who are taking these wild, crazy theories and entrenching themselves further, and I would say doubling down in their support of someone who's obviously guilty.
Yeah, you know what I don't understand, Frank. Well, let me rephrase it. Let me back up a second. I could not for the longest time understand why these guys were doing it. And this John Kennedy is somebody who's been around for a little while, and let's just say has a status in Congress, right? He's not, you know, you can either, I guess, depending on how you look at it, either rightfully or wrongfully look at somebody like, let's say AOC and say, well, they haven't been around long enough and they're just really a loudmouth and they're just doing this, that, or whatever. And on the other side, you can say, no, you know, she's there for change. She's making a difference, yada, 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 yada. But it's still that idea of not being in the system for a while, right? She's still very much a newcomer. Right. You can't say that about John Kennedy, right? He's been in Congress for quite some time. So he knows the gig. Okay. He knows how to play the gig. He knows how to play the game. What gets to me is you had somebody on national television whose credibility cannot be questioned, right? Even Fox Entertainment didn't question her credibility. And she comes flat out and says, this whole idea of Ukrainian interference is a Russian propaganda hoax, period. She didn't make that, in my opinion, she didn't say from what I can see or from what I understand. She stated it as gospel truth, as if it was coming from God's mouth himself. And now this guy turns around and gets back on Fox Entertainment and says, well, we don't know where it's from. It could have been the Russians. It could have been Ukraine, too. We don't know. You don't know. Nobody knows. And no, you know. You know. Literally, every intelligence agency at this point on the planet, right? Everyone on the planet. The Australians knew it was the Russians. Great Britain knew it was the Russians. All of our intelligence agencies knew it was the Russians. All of us did. There isn't anybody on the planet who doesn't think so, who cannot tell you unequivocally that it was somebody else. They're all telling you it was Russia. And this clown gets on Fox Entertainment and says, well, you don't know who it is. We don't know where it's from. I have to believe, Frank, that these folks are doing things simply because all they're doing is looking at polls. And that's it. I really think that's it. And I'll tell you something else. I think that's why you have seen the mass amount of quote unquote retirees in Congress, right? Because the polls are not in their favor and they'd rather retire than lose.
Right.
But whenever I wonder how long this is going to sustain. And I want to hear your thoughts on it because I will tell you my idea behind it and, you know, what my thoughts are. But first of all, do you think it's just simply polling or do you think that there's something else? And number two, why do you think the polling's as strong as it is?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to answer both questions, first off, I think polling has a large amount to do with it and maybe the underpinnings of polling, which is the resonance or what resonates with those guys that are on the other side and few women, i.e. Stefanik, but the few people who are on the other side and supporting Trump, in this issue right now, it resonates with them that Trump won their districts. It resonates with them that since the Tea Party, really, they've had to do their business of running for elections, because that becomes their business. It really isn't about governing for the people. But their business of running for elections, has their business model has to change, because they look at where the extremes are going. And those extremes, especially because we have gerrymandered districts, are what rules the day in the gerrymandered district. So that resonates with a lot of these Republicans. And they're saying, I don't want to piss off my extremely far right congressional district, the people that live in my congressional district. And I know by going against President Trump openly, I'll probably lose the vociferous level of the support in my extremely far right congressional district. So that's the danger. You know, that's the danger that they see, and that's the danger that probably puts them in a position of, let me try to get out in front of this and defend the president so that I keep my status in my congressional district. And there is some recent polling that would also tend to trend towards them thinking that way, not just in their little district, but across the country. And do I think that that will, or why do I think that's happening? Well, I mean, I think you've got the diehards who are even, quote unquote, I'll just pause for a second and switch gears here, Mr. Patsy. To your second question, making it clear that's what I'm going to address now, I think that the polling that has kind of trended against impeachment, if you look at it, what they've asked questions of, quote unquote, independents and Republicans and Democrats. And we know that the Republicans are going to be anti-impeachment as a general rule, and the Democrats that they interviewed are as a general rule. And it's almost equal on both sides, pro-impeachment. And then when you get to the quote unquote independents, what we've seen is from about 2 weeks ago to now, there was a growing number 2 weeks ago of independents who supported impeachment. And then more recently, that number has evened out. It's now closer to, you know, I mean, a dead heat. It's like 48% independents support impeachment and 47% do not. So I think what's behind those numbers is two things. I look very carefully at the polls that are being tracked. None of them ask questions of anybody any more than 1,000 or 1,200 participants, okay? So we've got, you know, about 1,200 participants in each of these polls. Assuming that you're getting people who properly identify as independents and remain independents, okay, that's step number one. Step number two, let's look at the exact questions that were asked and find out what that trend would mean. So I don't have the exact questions right up in front of me, but I will say this. When I read the question, it felt to me like you're asking me individually, personally, do I want to see the president impeached? And that's how that translates to people. And I will tell you that as much as I am somebody who thinks that the evidence is there to impeach the president, if you ask me, do I want to see the president impeached? It leaves me with an uneasy feeling in my stomach, because I don't want to be somebody who is saying, you know, flat out, you impeach the president. I want to see the evidence. And if the evidence is there, like we talked about in an indictment proceeding, then if the evidence is there, I want to see the people in Congress do their job and vote to impeach him. That's what I want to see. So what has to be asked to get a true reflection of where the polling it actually is something along that lines of a question, where you say, if the evidence is there, do you think the House of Representatives should vote to impeach Trump? If there's factual, credible evidence that shows Trump committed a crime, should the House of Representatives vote to impeach him? That would then take the feeling away from the individual answering the question and put the responsibility on where it is. And people have a much easier time answering that question, yes or no, than they do when you ask them, do you think he should be impeached?
Yeah. I think that, you know, a lot of what you're saying is dead on. The sample size, I think, matters a lot. You know what they say, right? Size matters, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, I really do. I really think it does matter. Not only the sample size, but those who are engaging in that poll matter as well. In other words, let's say I have 100 people that I'm, and I'm just using small numbers because it's, you know, it's just easier to converse with. Let's say I'm going to sample 100 people, and it's a phone, it's a phone poll, and 70 of those 100 people I call on landlines instead of cell phones. I'm willing to bet that that's going to skew my sample. Simply because of number one, the demographic you're now hitting, and number two, probably the areas of the country that you have access to. Because I would render a guess that far more people out on a farm, you know, a couple hundred acre farm someplace, might not be getting cell coverage. You know, they probably only have their landlines, or, you know, maybe a DSL line or something like that. But, you know, I for the longest time where I live, Frank, I've lived in this house longer without cable than I have with. Okay. And it was simply because it wasn't available here. And this isn't, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, right down the hill from a hunting town. Okay. So I think that has a lot to do with it. And what I also think is you cannot deny the overwhelming strength and the power of the Fox Entertainment Network. I really cannot stress enough how important and how strong they are. Because while every other network on the planet is showing you these hearings, and they're telling you the sky is blue, Fox News is telling everybody the sky is green while it's happening, and we are at best a 50-50 split. That's gotta terrify or impress the fuck out of somebody. It really does.
It's truly amazing, you know, that they have that much sway over people. And I think some of it is, Patsy, I think it's a marriage of, you know, when you're telling me what I want to hear 70% of the time, and then you marry that with, well, this has to happen. In order for the sky to be green, you have to be prosperous and you have to be happy. And we're going to make sure that you're happy and prosperous because we're going to eliminate your competition and make sure that they don't take what you have rightly deserving to you. So believe me, the sky is green, because if the sky wasn't green, you wouldn't be able to accomplish all those things, and we wouldn't be able to do these things for you. So I know these are kind of ludicrous examples or hypotheticals, but it's kind of that way. When you get to the core of it, it's like, well, let's get rid of all these immigrants who are taking your jobs. The benefits of us paying taxes in our country, what do we get back for that? And if we don't get back what we should, then other people are sponging off of our money. And, you know, then Trump is trying to prevent other countries from sponging off your money by, you know, calling Ukraine and saying, we're going to hold up this aid. So we'll sell you all of that so that we tell you you're going to be better off if you believe what we tell you, because we support the people who are going to keep the money in your pocket, or at least not spend your money frivolously. So if they can marry those things together with their untruths, then the people are going to be willing, the people that love to hear their message are going to be willing to swallow those untruths to hopefully get to what they want. Oh, it's okay to hate black people. It's okay to hate Mexicans, according to your news channel. Oh, I'm on board. That's cool. Let's go with whatever you got to say.
Yeah. And they do it. I don't want to say left-handed, but just enough to not be, so they can't get dinged for being racist or something, right? They just kind of insinuate things. They don't actually really say anything. They just kind of nudge. They don't actually push you off the cliff. They just kind of nudge you over toward it and tell you it's okay to jump. Somebody will be down there to catch you.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That kills me. But because they're everywhere, right? Murdoch was brilliant whenever he decided he was going to give away his network, right? You don't have to get it. They're going to put everything on the lowest tier cable package. They were going to, you know, we're going to tie in with AM radio stations. So like we're their new source where you listen to even our local AM radio channels, right? Whenever they break for the news, what, every quarter hour or something like that, what, or top of the hour for 10 minutes, and they cite their source, it's Fox News, right? They cite it. They tell you where it is. I mean, they've given away everything. They're the game app, right? Where they give away the game and then they hit you with all the microtransactions afterwards.
It's smart business.
Yeah, it's literally that same setup, right? We're gonna give you the gun, but we're gonna make you pay $10 each for the bullets. Right?
How about one of the first ones to really capitalize on that business model was Microsoft. They were basically, giving you away computers so that they could install their software, pre-install their software on it, and then you'd get used to running that software so that you would have to then purchase their software update to keep your programs going.
Yeah.
And the software updates were expensive. And once they had, once they had the product in millions and millions of users' hands, because they basically, they gave the initial software away free. And the price of computers in the big scheme of things weren't that expensive either. So, you got it on everybody's desktop, on everybody's house, and now they need your update, and they need your update the next year and the next year and the next year.
And then just to make sure you get the update, we're going to start killing the old ones off.
Exactly.
Right. So now you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's brilliant. So getting back to your original story here. Do you think that these guys, even though there's all this overwhelming evidence, right? And there's, if you're being honest and legit, then you hear legit news channels say this a lot. You hear it on MSNBC a lot. And you hear somewhat on CNN, but I got to put a caveat on there, and that is I don't watch a whole lot of CNN. So they may do it more often than I'm saying. So, but they will always tell you, their reporters or their, usually their reporters will always tell you that off camera or behind the scenes, the Republican senators are seeing what's going on and they're supportive, or, they're not happy with what Trump's doing and they want to act in a certain way, but whenever push comes to shove, they don't do it. And I'm wondering if that's as true as they're making it out to be. And the only reason I'm asking if you think it's as true as they're saying is because if it is, then these guys have no dignity. They have no honor and no dignity. And they're basically, selling their souls for a paycheck for that power that's involved. So what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are quite a few that are in that category. I mean, I think there are probably some notable exceptions, and I don't know who the names would be.
Well, sure, so it wouldn't be Lindsey Graham, I can tell you that.
No, it wouldn't be that. But you may have a Mitt Romney that's in the exception camp that's out there that's going to say, if the evidence points to clearly that Trump committed crimes that are impeachable offenses, should he be found guilty of them? Maybe you have a Mitt Romney who would say that he would vote to find him guilty on that. Would that be enough to influence, 19 other senators that are Republicans to find a conscience and be honorable? I don't know. I think that the trend that we see is that they've entrenched themselves publicly, clearly behind Trump. Are there any of those folks who are behind the scenes saying, boy, this looks bad, and these crazy conspiracy theories that we're utilizing to try to support our position are just crazy conspiracy theories, and they're not going to hold up forever? Or are there some that are just fully drinking the Kool-Aid? I think there's more than we'd like to believe that are fully drinking the Kool-Aid, that think that Trump is almost guaranteed a second term if he doesn't get impeached and convicted. That politically, if you look at the makeup of our country and if you look at the makeup of the divisions that you just talked about a few moments ago, that we're basically, a 50-50 split. I mean, it's not 50-50 because there's not enough voters to make it 50-50.
Right.
But, however you say that's an even split on both sides, that's pretty much where we are. And because of the makeup of the Electoral College, you've got a very good chance that Trump could get reelected in 2020. And those people that are on the other side that are drinking the Kool-Aid, they don't have integrity. No, to answer your question, they'll just go with the way the wind blows. And to them, they feel like the prevailing wind is, we can stave this off. We have enough of an excuse if the Senate sticks together, the Republican Senate sticks together and finds a reason not to convict him, that he'll get reelected. And then that'll keep me in my position because my base will be happy. So I just don't think that we have enough people on the side of integrity at this point, at this moment, to say, that'll change, so to speak.
Do you think that there's anything that's going to move them? What do you think could happen that would move them?
I'll tell you what could intervene. And I think it leads us to our next topic. You know, you've got these battles that are going on in courts, and specifically one that was just recent that we can use as an example is White House counsel Don McGahn has been subpoenaed to testify. And he, of course, raised the privilege, the executive privilege, and says that he's not going to cooperate with Congress. And that's been heard by a U.S. District Judge in, I believe it was D.C., Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. And ultimately, she ruled that McGahn has to testify. And I want to get into, before I go into a long soliloquy, and it won't be a long soliloquy, but before I keep speaking on and on, Master Patsy, I do want to tell you, I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that are in a ruling because they're very prescient. But let's stick, before we fully transition into that, your question was, do I think that there are things that could change that? And I do think this is an example of something that could change it. And other things like this, when it's examined in the light of day, in front of a judge, and things like, you know, Roger Stone being convicted, which already did happen. And we'll see what happens with Rudy Giuliani. If he is brought up on charges and it looks like he's going to go down, those kind of things could change people quickly because they see that the nonsense has a finite end and it's not just elections. So when they see those kind of things happen, it could change them for real.
Yeah, I think this Rudy Giuliani thing is devastating. You know, we talked a little bit beforehand, whenever we were talking about McGahn, and I kind of asked you a real quick question was. And just to give everybody kind of a bit of a background, Don McGahn was the former White House counsel, not Donald Trump's counsel. And that's a very important distinction that, you know, people have to remember so they don't get them confused. The DOJ moved, are the ones that are appealing this judge's decision. And I told you, I found that quite interesting.
Very interesting.
I'm real curious as to your take.
Well, you know, here's one of the takes on it. Don McGahn has a private attorney. Okay. His private attorney has commented following the judge's order saying Don McGahn will comply with Judge Jackson's decision unless it is stayed pending appeal. That's by his attorney, William Burke. Now, I don't know. I mean, the DOJ. They are a wing of the executive branch, okay? Their funding is certainly approved by Congress, but the proposal of what they are funded, it comes from the president. And he appoints the head of the DOJ. So it is an executive branch organization, let's say, governmental organization. So because this is an executive branch employee, like you said, he's not President Donald Trump's personal attorney. He is the White House counsel. So since it's all under the executive branch, I can see the argument as to why they would have a reason to intervene in the case. The only concern is it looks very much like, because as we just broke down, they're all in this together. and you know, when you look at it from a perspective of the law and you say, well, wait a minute, is there any perceived bias here? Is there any perceived conflict of interest here? And it's hard not to at least say that there's the perception of a conflict of interest when you say, well, the DOJ serves at the pleasure of the president, the head of the DOJ, the attorney general serves at the pleasure of the president, and his White House counsel was working for him as an executive, and that counsel can have his own private attorney. So why is the DOJ, who, you know, clearly is beholden to the president, intervening in this case where it's an attorney who has his own counsel? And is there a possibility of conflict there? So it does become interesting in that sense, but I can see why they would normally say they have the function to be able to intervene in this kind of case.
I have no doubt. I guess what I find it interesting is that they're willing to do that. It just seems like it's a little bit of a reach for an entire Department of Justice.
I agree.
Because, you know, and again, you know, like we said, there's nothing that says that once he complies with a subpoena that he actually has to say anything, right? He could just as easily walk in there and say, you know, for just being ignorant, just plead the fifth for everything, right? So I have no idea. Maybe, I don't know. I can't answer that. I refuse to answer that, whatever the case may be. I mean, he could pull a Lewandowski, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, as we like to say, whenever we played CYO ball, right? No blood, no foul. Yeah. And you just go on your way. So just the fact that they moved to do this really, really, it tells me that they're scared of something. Right, it does, because what other reason could there be?
Before we went on the air, don't act like you're guilty if you're not guilty.
Right, if you're not guilty, don't act like it. Speaking of guilt, let's talk real quick about our Navy SEALs.
University to advance AI.
Yeah,
and for some reason my Alexa's going off.
I do want to talk about that, and I think it's an interesting there's an interesting thing there where the head of the Navy was let go recently because he basically was upset with the pardoning of and I want to get into the detail about that, but real quick before we just segue into that, I do want to not forget Judge Kentaji Brown's Jackson's 118-page ruling.
Oh, yeah. You did want to mention that. I'm sorry, Frank. Yes, you did.
That's okay. She indicated in her ruling, quote unquote, presidents are not kings. No one is above the law. However busy or essential a president aide might be, and whatever their proximity to sensitive domestic and national security projects, the president does not have the power to excuse him or her from taking an action that the law requires. So, you know, she found it, I think, very important to include that language, and it's very strong and compelling language. The ruling, the legal ruling is the last part, but the what we would call dicta, D-I-C-T-A, is something that judges sometimes throw in. It's not precedent setting, but it's there to guide people to understand why the judge is coming to this decision. It's very strong dicta in this case where she says presidents are not kings. No one is above the law. And I think that's something that should resonate with everybody in our society. And that's something that we want is fairness. We want equal application of the law. We want to, quote unquote, drain the swamp. That's why that message resonated with so many people. And she's telling you right here and now, people that have listened to that message, you've got the chief swamp filler, not the guy that's draining the swamp here, because he thinks he's above the law. And he thinks he's a king of you all, and he's not. So I thought it was real important for us to communicate that message to our listeners, and hopefully that's wide received, because it's a message that, you know, we grew up with. I think you and I, Patsy, our generation was taught that no one's above the law. But these folks seem to want to place Trump above the law. And you hear things like Rick Perry saying he's been divinely picked by God, you mm-hmm. know, to serve in this role. And that's where you're trying to set somebody up to be, quote unquote, above the law. Because if you can convince these people, some of the people in the masses, that he's from a higher authority, he's not of our law, he's of God's law, you know. So this kind of message from Judge Jackson is really bringing things back down to reality again. He's not above the law. He's not divinely put here by anybody. He's not a king. So I'm sorry to bring us back to that, but I thought it was real important to communicate that message.
Well, no, it was good, and I apologize, because you know, you said you did say you wanted to touch on it, and I kind of walked right past it. So
no, it's okay. You know what? Our president likes to walk right past things. You're nearly as egregious as his. So let's transition to your question about this Navy SEAL issue. And I think it's real. Again, it deals with the law, and it's where the president has circumvented the law. Because the law in this case was a Navy tribunal that heard all the evidence, that people came forth. Now think about this. People in the Navy or in the Marines that were in this guy's platoon, the Navy, they were in his platoon. They served with him. They saw his actions firsthand. They came and testified at a trial and found him guilty of murder. Under the military court of justice, this is not some, you know, made up kangaroo court out in the middle of BFE.
There are signs of growing.
They have specific, very, very specific rules of order. And they're all commissioned. I mean, they're all in the service. They all take their oath to the service, the United States. And they came and testified. And the jury was also those same people who took the oath to the United States and are in service. They found them guilty. So all that mechanical process that had to take place from a legal machination standpoint all took place, which, imagine that. You serve with somebody in their platoon, arm in arm, shoulder to shoulder, and then you come and have to testify against them. And you've done your duty to do that. And then the president comes in and says, oh, forget about that. We're gonna pardon this guy. No matter what you did, I'm pardoning it because I want to make this political. And then, because seeing through that, the chief of the Navy, the head of the Naval, United States Navy, was very upset with President Trump for doing that, because he said, you're undermining not only the system of justice that we have and all those people who came forward to find him guilty and do their duty, so to speak, but you're also undermining all of our military around the world, because if they're ever in conflict with another country, other countries are going to look and say, the United States doesn't uphold their responsibility. They're not the shining light on the hill anymore, saying this is how things are to be done. We police our own. When they do something wrong in your country and they murder innocent civilians, we're going to hold them accountable. So they're going to look at us and say, well, there's a representative of their military. They treat us like crap. They do horrible things around the world. Let's torture and maim and kill this person because we don't have anything to live up to. And this Navy, the head of the Navy, knows this to be a fact, knows this to be a legitimate concern, and is very upset with the president and says, you need to stop doing these kind of things. But of course, this emperor who has no clothes doesn't want to be told he's wearing no clothes, right? So he has to ask Mark Esper to fire the head of the Navy because he didn't want to hear a lesson from the head of the Navy, right?
Right. Right. And you know, here's the thing that well, first of all, I guess my question is, why would you even stick your nose in someplace where it doesn't belong? And you know, I always make the argument that whenever you are the person who is in a position of authority, okay? If when you're questioned, your rebuttal or your answer to that question is, I have the absolute right to do that, or forget the absolute part, I have the right to do that. If you are the person who is in a position of authority and your argument is you have the right to do something, you're losing the argument.
Okay. You're wrong. You're wrong. And by saying I have the right to do that, you're admitting you're wrong. You're just not admitting you're wrong. You don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Richard Spencer, who was who was fired, he wrote obviously wrote his letter, and he part of his letter that I want to read to you, I guess. And it's three paragraphs, so just indulge me for a second. He goes on and on and on and on about his time service and how honored he was, and it's a very well written letter. But the part that really stands out to me were these three paragraphs. And the quote is, "The rule of law is what sets us apart from our adversaries. Good order and discipline is what has enabled our victory against foreign tyranny time and time again. From Captain Lawrence's famous order of don't give up the ship to the discipline and determination that propelled our flag to the highest point of Iwo Jima. The Constitution and the Uniform Code of Military Justice are the shields that have set us apart, the beacons that protect us all." He goes on, "Unfortunately, it has become apparent in this respect I no longer share the same understanding with the commander-in-chief who appointed me in regards to the key principles of good order and discipline." And it's funny how we keep hearing the word discipline whenever it's come to Trump. "I cannot in good conscience obey an order that I believe violates the sacred oath I took in the presence of my family, my flag, and my faith to support and defend the Constitution of the United States." And what I thought was a kind of a left-handed slight, he goes on, "The president deserves and should expect a secretary of the Navy who is aligned with his vision for the future of our force generation and sustainment. Therefore, with pride in the achievements we've shared and everlasting faith in the continued service and fidelity of the finest sailors, Marines, and civilian teammates on earth, I hereby acknowledge my termination as the United States Secretary of the Navy to be effective immediately." That's about as scathing a letter that you'll ever see anybody in the Navy or say in the military write to the commander in chief. And I thought it was very well done. And I thought that it in those three paragraphs, it truly summed up what a dick move this was.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's right there. What you read was very powerful. It's a great letter, and some of the other takeaways from that letter. Well, one of the other big takeaways from the commander in chief who appointed me, he clearly says in there that he was directly appointed by Trump, which, this isn't an Obama holdover as the chief or the secretary of the Navy. This was Trump's appointed head of the Navy, secretary of the Navy. So, you know, you've got, I think, again, combating these falsehoods or the narratives that might come out of the MAGA people. Well, you know, these people don't, they're always from the deep state. That's why they're trying to undercut President Trump. Well, this is his own appointee who is telling you that he's not seeing the commander-in-chief live under the rule of law, and that he can't execute orders that he in good faith does not believe in. And that he went pretty far with that statement, you know. And every, you know, person that serves on a ship knows that when the commander of that ship, the XO, says, you do this, you do it, unless there's a specific moral reason that you don't do that. And that's a very specific code that they live by. And that goes all the way to the top. So when the secretary who was appointed by the commander in chief sees that he can't live with those orders anymore, that's a strong statement. And he's putting it out there to everybody.
Let's put this on the other side of the coin now, Frank. Let's assume that I'm a huge piece of shit, and I don't feel like following an order that was given to me. Not that I have a moral obligation, like you stated. I just don't want to do it. Okay? Maybe I don't like my CO. Maybe I want my assignment changed and I asked for it to be changed 6 times and they were like, no, this, you're going to be on this boat and this is where you're going to stay. And I'm just, fuck you. I'm not doing it anymore. What's to stop the next clown to do this and then jump on Fox Entertainment and tell them my sob story and have this clown go in and intervene and get him off the hook again? And tell me if that's not possible. Number two, tell me that's not reasonably possible.
Are you talking about Spencer possibly going on and having a reversal?
Well, you know what I'm saying is, yeah, this I think his seal was Gallagher, right? I think it's
Eddie Gallagher, the guy who was the seal that was was convicted and then.
So what I'm saying is, let's take the next Eddie Gallagher, and let's say he decides, you know what, I don't feel like doing whatever assignment he has.
Right.
Or they say take prisoners and he just goes and shoots them all in the head. He just lines them all up and shoots them in the head. He just executes all of them.
Right.
I don't care. Just make up any scenario you want.
Sure. I get you.
Okay. What's to stop him then from in the middle of his trial, right before his trial starts, he just gets on Fox Entertainment and says, oh, I'm a victim. And just happens to be wearing a MAGA hat. And Trump lets him off the hook, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is what we're setting ourselves up to be, isn't it? I mean, when you take these kind of actions, when the president takes these kind of actions, isn't that what we're setting the precedent for?
Yeah, that's my question. Do you think that scenario is entirely unreasonable?
No, absolutely not. I think that you're going to have many examples of that, not just in the military. I think you're going to have many examples of that across all society.
Well, you're starting to see that now with all the asshole fucking racists we have going on now, who thinks that, you know, because their savior is a racist, that it's okay for them to be racist too. You're seeing that all over the place. When the hell would you have had a march like you had in Charlottesville?
Right.
If it wasn't for this dickhead, it never would have happened.
Nope. Right?
Never would have happened. So he's already, you know, promoting this bullshit. So I guess my bigger question is, does he know he's promoting this stuff, or is he willing to do it? Is he doing it willingly because that's what he thinks is going to keep him in power?
I think it's a very mistaken, especially with the military thing. I mean, the racist thing, I can see where he's going with that. Like, he will be, as you said before, like what, you know, Fox News does with it. He's generally going to be subtle about it, but he uses the dog whistles. And I think he thinks that that's enough to keep his very fringe, strong, vocal, far-right, maniacal MAGA people happy. And that keeps him afloat, okay? But as far as this military, you know, pardoning of war criminals, that's a strange one to me, because I don't think he knows the long-term impact of that. I think that, you know, when you've got General Jim Mattis, who he went through a blow up with, you've got, I mean, military people are smart. Okay. Even, you know, I'm just saying people that are enlisted recurrently and maybe just recently out, they know that some of our staunchest allies are being cut off. And they know that some of our most hated enemies are being emboldened by this president. For example, they look at what he's doing with Russia and North Korea, the dictators in both those countries, and sucking up to them. They don't like that. Believe me, they may not come outward and say, you know, I'm not happy with President Trump doing this with these guys because they're antithetical to what we believe in, but it's there. Believe me, it's an undercurrent. Like I said, thumbing his nose at our allies. These guys go out and work. They do maneuvers with people in different countries, you know, England, Canada, Spain. I mean, I know a lot of people that were in the Air Force that flew NATO runs with Spanish and Italian and French pilots. They had camaraderie with all those folks. So, you know, they know who's on our side. And they know that when the president thumbs his nose at those allies, It's not good for us. And then to do what I said, to underpin or to undercut our military justice system so brazenly. And then you've got a chief of the Navy that, or secretary of the Navy that comes out and says what he said. The military support, I think, is going to wane because you can't just mistreat people that way and mistreat the operations that way. They see the negative effect that's going to happen in the long run. They really do. They're smart people. They've been judging him prior to this as somebody who increased their budget. So it felt good. It felt like quote unquote support. But when he does all these actions, they see how that directly impacts them, and it's not going to be something that's going to help him. So I think he's miscalculating in that part, Patsy, as to that question.
Yeah, I do too. But I'll be honest. I don't think he cares. I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think long-term effects are even in his, I don't think he has the ability, and I mean this in all sincerity, I don't think he has the ability to understand or recognize long-term effects when it comes to decisions he makes. I don't think he has it in him to understand or project what will happen if I pick the blue pill instead of the red pill. Right. I don't think he has that ability to, and so he just doesn't care.
Right.
Fantastic, Frank. Boy, I really hate to get into the Thanksgiving holiday on a sour note, but boy, we really did, didn't we?
Well, I mean, I think that the good note out of it is, just to kind of put a last bow on that, is there's still people of integrity, i.e., you know, most recent example, Richard Spencer. You know, then we had Fiona Hill last week, but there's still people of integrity that are willing to stand up for what's right, even if they are appointed by this crazy, you know, emperor with no clothes. So we could take away from it that there are people that still stand, speak their conscience, they speak truth to power, even at a personal cost. So let's use that as a positive end, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a great one. That's a great way to end this. Fantastic, Frank. Like always, you were tremendous. Is there anything you want to tell everybody before we throw this in the can?
Just to echo what you said, I hope everybody, including you, Patsy, and your family, thank you for doing this every week for us. I hope you all have, and everybody out there listening, has a wonderful and safe and happy Thanksgiving.
As do I. So like I say, you know, at the end of all of our podcasts, your time is very valuable. And the fact that you're willing to spend some of that time with us means a great deal to us. You truly have no idea how important that is to us. So for our my co-host and my dear friend, Frank, until next week, everybody, same bad time, same bad channel. If you don't understand that, you're far too young to be listening to this podcast. But until then, have a happy and safe holiday with friends and family. And goodbye, good luck, and God bless.
Butchered Sports. Raw and unfiltered, the way you wish your local sports anchor would bring it to you. Find us on Twitter at Butchered Sports and on YouTube at Butchered Sports. Make sure to like, comment, and subscribe.
Thanks for listening to Holy Sh** with Frank and Master Patsy. If you like our show, please subscribe and leave us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And don't forget to support us on Patreon. Join us again next week when we discuss the next thing that made us say, holy shit.